G'day, thanks for joining us. Some Sunday mornings on the program, it's like a train. It moves off slowly, but it gets its own momentum. Calls come in from all over about all sorts of things. Youngies and oldies and in-betweeners, about surfers and sweet potatoes or marathons, you name it. And I love the voices, the reassurance they give to everyone who listens across Australia and around the world. Please enjoy the best of Oz from our team here on a Sunday morning. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, g'day, Macca. Cliff Hale here from One Raceway in just outside Goulburn in New South Wales. I rang you a couple of weeks ago when I was heading down the World Superbikes at Phillip Island talking about Australian volunteer marshals.
All right.
Assist, and we spoke about electric motorbikes.
Yep.
Well, I'm just listening to you reminiscing there about the quiet and the noise. We've got a challenge here at One Raceway with the classic motorcycle TT, the inaugural classic Australian motorcycle TT here at Run Raceway, what used to be called Wakefield Park, because we've got a sound issue. We've got these old bikes running around, some 40s, 50s and 60s, and sometimes they just sort of bounce the DBs a little bit. So that's something we have to manage. But we've got a fantastic three-day festival here. The first one, we're hoping to become a true classic every year after year. There used to be one called the Island Classic down at Phillip Island many years ago. It was extremely popular, but I think COVID killed that one off and it never came back. But we've got a selected group of enthusiasts, mostly old blokes and old motorbikes, and it's fantastic seeing these old machines going around in true racing form too, not just parading, but actually racing. So it's great fun. Yesterday, unfortunately, we got rained out. We had a big thunderstorm come through late in the afternoon, and by the time the track drained away and we cleared debris that had washed off, it was too late to restart racing. But we're back for our third day today, and we're hoping to see big crowds come out and see what is going to be fantastic last day racing of these old motorbikes.
One Raceway. I've never been to One Raceway. That's just out of Goulburn, is it?
Yeah, it's a Tarana, so it's the old Wakefield Park. Wakefield Park used to be run by the Benalla Racing Club, and then for various issues of planning and the like, they lost the Land Council approval to run it. But a wonderful family called the Shelley family, Steve Shelley and Greg Shelley of the Shelley Lemonade Factory history.
Wow.
Bought the place and put in millions of dollars, literally millions of dollars in personal time and effort to redesign the track. Well, the track's much the same design, but they put in drainage and they built hills. They geoformed the place to deal with sound bouncing off out over the valley, over the rural properties around us. And so they've got very strict noise controls now, which are well managed by what the boys have done. And look, they are classic Australian blokes, these guys. They love their racing, and they're heroes within the motorcycling community and car racing community for resurrecting Wakefield Park into what they call now One Raceway. Now, it's a unique raceway because they can run in both directions. They can't do it with bikes, but they can run cars in one direction, turn them around and run them in the opposite direction. So it's actually two tracks in one. They call it One Raceway, but it's two tracks in one.
And how do you describe today's race meeting? What sort of bikes are they?
Okay, so they're classic motorcycle bikes. So they're not vintage or veterans. So we're sort of talking just basically post-World War II, sort of more your 50s, 60s and 70s. And so it's bikes that the old guys wanted when they were younger and they can afford now. And they're having a great time.
Okay, and what else is on, Cliffo? What else are you doing?
Well, I'll finish here. I live in Canberra, so I'm lucky I'm only an hour away. But tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., I'm on a plane out of Canberra to go to America to officiate at the MotoGP. It's the Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. There are five of Australians. So a couple of years ago, there was a general invitation by the race director there. She loves how Australians run our events down at Phillip Island for MotoGP and World Supers, and put out a general invitation for any Aussie motorcycle race official who wanted to come over to come and help run the event, because it is a massive event at Austin, Texas, and they need hundreds and hundreds of people trackside to make it a safe and fair event. We had, I think, 12 people 2 years ago. We had 15 last year. Now, for some reason, I don't know why, there's five of us going over this year that I'm aware of. Like I said, two are on planes right this very minute, and I'm on a plane tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Well, you'll have a great time there, I reckon, mate.
I love it. A couple of years ago, we had a washed-out event down. It was heavily raining in the camping grounds at Phillip Island, and we took a young American fellow into our care, as Aussies do, and we gave him a dry house for the weekend with us. And 2 years ago, when I put on social media that I was coming to Austin to officiate, to volunteer, he popped up and says, "Oh, you're coming to America." And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "You know, I live 20 miles from the track." He is now a family friend. His parents are a family friend in Dallas. He lends me a motorbike that I can ride to the track and what have you. And it's just wonderful hospitality. You know, we're down on the Yanks at the moment because some of the things their idiot leaders are doing. But the people themselves are marvelous. And I really love Joel and his family. And I'm off again and really going to be enjoying staying with them for the next week.
Good on you, Cliffo. Thanks for your call, mate.
No worries. And look, I'll try and bring you in from Austin if the time zones work.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Macca.
See ya.
Bye, mate.
Bye. On the back of a bike, and he's off to Austin, Texas. But that sounds like a great day today at Goulburn at One Raceway. I should take my 1968 Honda CL175 down. I have to get a new battery. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, you're going to fit a nice bell on it too. Got the tram bells back, Macca.
Who's that?
It's Brendan from Brisbane, just back from the China Day mission.
Oh, g'day, China. Brendan. How are you? What's that bell you're ringing?
Oh, that's the new bicycle bell we've got for the paths, and you can hear it a good 50 or 100 metres ahead. It's a tram bell, mechanical bell, but it's electronic. You've got a button on the handlebar, and the path walkers know you're coming through behind, like a freight train out in rural area. The bell just penetrates. It has to be a bell, not a horn or any other noise that's ambient, distinct.
Is this because these bikes are knocking people over all over the world?
Yeah, well, I flew back into the Brisbane International earlier in the week and went over the Gateway Bridge, and there's the electric illegal motorbike doing 100 k's per hour on the footpath past me. Oh, 100 k's an hour, Macca. And over in China, you'll have the mother on the back, the father on the front, and the two kids in the middle on the single seat and getting their way to school, and there's no issues, no helmets, nothing.
What a world, Brendan. What a world. You can't believe it. And nobody, premiers, and I assume it's their gig, apart from anything else, they're powerless to do anything. But there's lots of things where nothing happens anymore. Look at, I can't believe the money that criminal gangs are getting from cigarettes, illegal cigarettes. But we don't do anything, you know. Oh, yes, we've got some, you know, we're looking after. But it still continues. It still continues.
And, my electric scooter does 100 k's an hour, but I couldn't catch this kid on his bike. He was doing 120. Sort of catch him, couldn't. Yeah. So the police can't catch him, so it doesn't matter what the legislations do. The thing is, Macca, you cannot legislate stupid.
So, Brendan, how is things in China? You've been there quite a few times, haven't you?
Yeah, according to Google AI, the mission was complete and successful.
What does that mean?
Well, it looks at what was reviewed and discussed. You can even ask AI now, you know, when did E-Scoot now last speak with Macca, and it gives you a full briefing.
That's depressing. Dear, oh dear, yeah. That's why it's really nice out on the trans line, out there middle of nowhere. No phones, no food, no pets, ain't got no cigarettes. That's your bell, is it?
Yeah, so that's why we use that sound, the same as what's on trams, because trams are distinctively known from that sound. And the pathwalkers, if you've got a horn, think you're on the road in a car, and if you've got a little bell, they think you're a little bicycle bell doing a low speed. So this is an audible warning device, a distinct sound. It doesn't exist anywhere in the world, and I've just brought a few back from China, and I'm packing them on the pack bench to send out for field tests.
And you made, and they're made in China? Obviously,
they're made in China for me. Yes, custom the design with an electric solenoid, like a school bell, like a fire alarm bell housing, 4 inches, and then a driver with a button to run them at the 72 volt that the scooters have. Yeah.
Well, that's I think it's a great idea, but I don't know what you do about these people, usually young kids, tearing along on footpaths and. I remember when I was a kid, I didn't know about it, but they told me when I went to this certain town, they said, look, don't ride the bicycle on the footpath. This is just an ordinary bike that you pedal. This is 40 years ago. Don't ride the bike on the footpath because Sergeant Blake will find you and he'll kick your bum. But now it's de rigueur. Yeah. They ride along the That's road right. till they can't, then across a level crossing, then on a footpath. Nobody does a thing about it, but as you say, you can't legislate stupid.
Exactly, yes. And I tell you what, the old Brisbane International Airport's not looking too good. I came through there and it was a debacle. Not all of the baggage carousels were running. There was three or four different big unnecessary queues. As for baggage scanning, hardly anything gets scanned. You get everything scanned when you jump on the metro in Shenzhen. They just selectively scan stuff here. And look, I don't know how they're going to get 20,000 international visitors through it and here for the Olympic Games, but geez, it needs a bit of work.
I'll see you in Brisbane hopefully soon, Brendan. Good on you.
Thanks, Marco.
See you, mate. Bye. Mark's in Geelong. Is that right, Mark?
Good morning, Marco. Good morning, listeners. Yes, that's right. It's Dags from South Australia, but I'm actually in Geelong at the minute, Marco. I'm following my son who's going around Australia and doing the Ironman events, and it's lobbed in Geelong this weekend, and it's absolutely picture perfect this morning, Macca. The sun isn't up, of course, and it's going to be a blue sky day, very still, and there's just people everywhere. We're walking along the Esplanade as we speak, Macca, and there's just trails and trails of athletes with pumps, bike pumps, and Lycra, and all the bling, mate. And I spoke to you a few years ago, Macca, when I blew a hamstring out at Unadatta. You might have recalled when we talked about the Uber, if you can recall that conversation.
No, I can't actually. Go on.
Oh, right. Geelong has put it on this weekend for the Ironman event. It's going to be a cracking day, Macca.
So your son's name is?
His name's Jack. And they call him Jack Daggs. Yep.
Jack Daggs. And these Ironmans, how many of those go on around Australia? Is it one company, or is it Ironman, everybody runs Ironman in some sort of a way, or what?
Yeah, I mean, do a few triathlons throughout the course of the year, and that's anywhere in Australia. But Ironman typically is in Cairns and here in Geelong and over in Busselton and Port Macquarie, and then they go overseas, of course. But it'll be all over the TVs today, Macca. It's certainly a big event.
And what's involved? Cycling, obviously, and swimming and running. Is that it?
Absolutely. Huge swim. I guess it's about 3 kilometre swim. The athletes do over 200 k's on the bike, and the run's about 42 k's or something like that. So I sit on the hill and watch in admiration, that's for sure.
And Dags, did you used to go in these Ironmen or...?
No, I played footy. The last footy team I played for, Macca, was the Cooper Petey Saints, and I was about 43 years of age. But that was a long time ago, about 10-plus years ago. But, I'm an AFL footballer. Had a strapping career in, you know, country SA, really.
How many people do they get involved in the Ironman? I mean, geez, you'd have to be pretty super fit to do one of these, wouldn't you? I mean, they get a big crowd. You're implying there's a big crowd there to watch.
Oh, thousands upon thousands. And just the bikes alone, Macca, you know, they're up to, you could pay $25,000 for a road bike. And they've just cradled them in racks. And there's thousands of bikes. So there's huge money involved. That's the sport they love. And, you know, we just go and support and follow them and wish them well.
How many competitors will go in today's event?
Oh, 1,800, Jack sort of suggested. So 1,800 people today on the streets of Geelong, right across the coast there, running away. I mean, the half marathon takes about 4 hours, and I think the full marathon, they'll go all day.
Well, what's Jack's story? Jack does this around Australia, and why? Do you earn money, or looking for fame, or what's the story?
No, he sort of gave footy away. You know, he's a cracking footballer, and he gave that away to do triathlons and Ironman. And we thought, oh, well, you know, go with what your passion is. And he's a diesel mechanic at one of our Copper SA mines in South Australia. Grew up in Roxby Downs, and he's just fallen in love with the sport.
Jack there, put Jack on.
Jacko, Macca wants to talk to you.
Hi, Jacko.
Hey, Mac, how you going?
I'm not bad, mate. Why do you do this, Jacko? Do you make some money? Can you make money? You can't just go travelling around Australia for no reason at all, can you? Whose funds this?
Nah, just myself, mate. Yeah, just an age grouper, having a crack and loving every minute of it. It's good to get out the state and get the family out of home too, and they come and support, and I love it.
I spoke to a young bloke about his soccer. I said, how do you go? He says, I'm decent. Are you decent?
Oh, just a hack, mate. Just a battler.
I still don't get it. Jacko. But, yeah, if you love it, I suppose you love it. So which other ones do you go in? Is Geelong and what? Cairns and?
Yeah, probably Cairns and Sunshine Coast this year. Last year was just Cairns and Noosa, but we'll look to venture out again this year and give Sunshine Coast a go and, yeah, hopefully have a good day today.
How old are you, Jacko?
25.
25. And how long will you do this for?
Or definitely a few more years, I reckon.
Well, yeah, if you love it, I suppose. You got a gig? Do you work during the week, or if you can, if you're not right?
Doing diesel mechanic at the moment, FIFO, yeah.
Fly. Well, you can earn a bit of money doing that. Yeah, so, well, keep it up, Jacko. Keep in touch with us from time to time, okay?
And thanks, heaps, Macca. Appreciate it.
And good luck. Let me know how you go today. All right, good on you, Jacko. Thanks, Mark.
Will do, mate. Thanks, heaps. Cheers.
See ya. Bye. Yeah, sorry.
Just a quick one, Macca.
Yeah.
Just a big shout-out to a little fella called Lawson on one of South Australia's remote cattle stations. The other day, I'm an emergency services worker in the mines, and we responded to a pastoralist who had come off his motorbike at speed and was pretty busted up near the dog fence. And we responded, myself and a registered nurse, and we met this young fella. He's 10 years of age, and he met us on the side of a dirt track and a haul road, and then we actually responded out, and he got in his old man's ute, and he took us and navigated us through some pretty rugged sort of country out to the fence line where his old man was all busted up. And this little fella Lawson, I tell you right now, he's truly a hero in our eyes. He escorted us out there. He held up some of the medical equipment and passed us some of the equipment that was required to get his father in the right sort of place, and then transported to our mine site, and then we flew this gentleman off site in the RFDS. And this little fella, I'll tell you right now, young Lawson, if you're listening in, or any of his followers out there amongst the far north, I'll tell you what, well done, son. He's going to go a long way, this little fella.
What's the name of the station again?
McDougall Peak, the Twins, up in South Australia. And Lawson, if he's listening, mate, well done. He was so courageous. He spent over an hour waiting. He was talking to, site medical staff. He was talking to the RFDS. He was talking to people who were coordinating the emergency. And he was 10 years of age, can you believe it? Just jumps in the old ute, drives us out to a remote spot in the South Australian outback. And, he was there for his dad and his mum, and he was just amazing.
And how is dad?
He got to Adelaide via plane. He's had a few operations, mate, and he's undergoing rehab now. But he's in good spirits. He's listened to your show, I'm sure, and a few country music tunes. And he's a great man.
All right. Good on you. Thanks, Mark. Good luck, and thanks for the call.
Good on you, Macca. Appreciate it, buddy. Have a great day. See
ya. Bye. G'day. This is Macca.
Morning, Macca. This is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah, I just thought I'd say hello. I'm between Ballina and Byron Bay en route to Brisbane Airport, and then I'm flying over to Honiara for a few days.
How come?
I've got a job there. I'm helping them with a... They need an Act of Parliament called the Land Valuation Act, so I'm helping them draft the Act.
Is that all?
Yeah, something different. Yeah.
What's your skills? What's your story, Paul?
Well, Well, I'm not a parliamentary grassman, but I'm a property valuer, and I've been one for more decades than I want to think about, but it's not dissimilar to a job I did 40 years ago in Zambia. They'd never paid rates in their life, so all the councils there needed valuations done because the national government was sick of paying for everything. It was all that time the locals chipped in and paid rates. So this thing in the Solomon's pretty similar.
Uh-huh. And what's your connection with the Solomons?
I was just scouted here because of my past crimes, and somebody recommended me to undertake this task.
Uh-huh. And is this usual for you, that you get in a plane and go and you're a problem solver, mate? You're an influencer.
Yeah, well, I'm also the most hated guy on Norfolk Island too, because up until 2016, I'd never paid income tax or land tax or rates. So the big bad guy from Ballina went over there and valued all the properties. Now they pay rates. So I just keep my head down when I'm over there. I put a mask on.
Wear a false beard.
Yeah. I might wear a wig too, because I need a bit of hair on top.
So you live at do you live at Ballina or no, round about the place?
No, I live in Ballina.
Yeah. Somebody told me that last week? Yeah, he rang up and he told me he's living out in the bush, and he said because land values to rent, and one of his mates has got a property, so he said you can come and stay at my place. So he's put up a tent in his back of his ute or whatever he's got, and he's living out there because he said land values and rates and rents in Ballina and environs are going up through the roof. Would that be right?
Oh, no, that is correct, yeah. It's never been really cheap, but it took off after COVID, and it's on the rise again, yeah.
Everything was supposed to go back to normal after COVID, wasn't it, Peter? It's been the opposite. It's been a disaster. I won't call it a disaster because we'll get depressed. But everywhere you look, there's around the world too, and we've been affected, but everybody seems to have been affected in one way or another by COVID.
Yeah. Now, just something interesting. I'm joining let's call it profession, because we're professionals, sir. I had my second day as an apprentice at the community radio up in Lismore on the French music show.
On the French music show? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, tell me why. Why French music?
No, it's not the music so much. It's just anything French is fantastic. I'm in love with France and the language and the food and the wine and the cheese, etc.
You're a Francophile. That's what you'd be described as.
Well, I should be, the amount of exposure I've had to it. For example, when I was a kid at school, we used to... I thought it was silly at the time, but now I look back, it was a good way to get us tugging around some French. We used to say the Hail Mary in French before we started our actual class. So
well, that was it. Give us a spasm.
Okay, we'll start with the sign of the cross. Au nom du Père et du Fils et du Saint-Esprit, ainsi soit-il. Je vous salue, Marie, pleine de grâce, le Seigneur est avec vous. Now, if I had more time, I'd recite L'Hippopotam, which is a poem by C.F.L. Gautier about the hippopotamus in Java. But we haven't got time now because I've got a plane to catch.
Gautier, that'd be spelled Gautier, not in Gautier as in the pop star Gotye.
Correct. I think there's an H in there too. Thier.
And when did you fall in love with France?
There was a school thing, and then there was a French girlfriend I had in Zambia, which probably helped, and numerous holidays and working there in the tourism industry when I needed a sabbatical from evaluations.
Yeah, it's just a nice sounding language, and it's quite easy to learn. I like French at school, but I had the worst, except for first year, which was probably the important year. We had a great French teacher, Miss McLaughlin or Mrs. McLaughlin. She was great, but the rest of them were very forgettable. But I loved it. I loved the sound of it. That's what I love, and you know, and the words and
And I was extremely lucky because this guy was. He wanted us to get the exposure to the language, and he would carry into the classroom a tape recorder the size of a modern day washing machine. And I'm not joking.
And teachers are so important. It's such a tough job to be a teacher, I reckon. And you've got to put up with all sorts of kids and the war front of the staff room, all those sort of things. But I loved when you get a teacher who's good like that. Yeah, it just you just get wedded to a subject, I think.
Yeah, one of my regrets in life is when I travel, I notice that if I go to France and I'm up in the mountains and I look at a glacial formation, I just wish I hadn't been such a smart ass to my geography teacher. And then I wish I could dig up my French teacher and thank him, but unfortunately they're well gone. I know teachers are very much underrated, underpaid, and not respected.
Sur le pont d'Avignon, on était sur le pont.
Oh, bravo. Perfect.
Good on you.
I must get going, otherwise I'll miss my aeroplane.
Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Later, mate. Au revoir.
Au revoir. Don't have to tell you about the price of petrol and the price of diesel. There's been oil shocks before. I thought a bloke we ought to talk to who knows a bit about this. He runs trucks and he's been doing it for all his life, really. His name's Ron Finnemore. He's my guest this morning. Morning, Ron.
Morning, Macca. How are you?
Good, thank you. For instance, that Ron was yesterday at the Golden Slipper at Rosehill Racecourse. How was that, Ron?
Fantastic. Had a great day. Great crowd. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. And see James McDonald win three group ones in a row and break the record was fantastic.
And Zach Lloyd rode three too.
Three, yeah. And both of them rode horses for me yesterday, but neither of them won on my horses.
There you go. It's interesting, isn't it? Because they were just about to sell Rose Hill. And I thought to myself, what a great day, the Golden Slipper days. I was there years ago. I don't go to the races a lot, but I was there years ago and I met this bloke, old bloke. We were both leaning on the railing, and there was a big crowd there that day. It would have been 20, 30 years ago. And he was an old bloke, and I said, where are you from? He says, I'm from Melbourne. He says, I've been coming to the Golden Slipper for, 30, 40 years, and we had a yarn. It was great, and there was people from everywhere. But why you would sell something like Flemington or Rose Hill, it's just beyond me. And I'm so glad, and I've got nothing to do with racing and no axe to grind, but I just thought, I think it's a wonderful course.
Well, the members were against it, and they proved, in my opinion, to be right. And you can't lose that because, they sold Harold Park and shifted the trots to Menangle, and nobody goes.
No.
And part of racing and all those things is the people, and the people going and being entertained and from all walks of life. Mixing and having a great time.
It's like the football. If no crowd, you forget it. Well, you're just running around. It's like this program. No one listens. You're no good. But we get lots of listeners from all over the place about all sorts of things. Let's talk about diesel and petrol. You've been through oil shocks before, I suppose.
Yeah, I have. Unfortunately, I've been in this business for over 60 years, but this is the worst. This is by far the worst that I've experienced.
And, why is that?
Well, because the price has gone up so much so quickly. I mean, we're $1.35 more than we were 3.5 weeks ago.
Mm. And it's about $3. Well, around the city it was $3, but I don't know what it is out in the bush.
Well, it varies from place to place and where the people buy it from. I mean, we buy from four different sources, and the price varies 15 cents a litre for diesel in that situation because of different formulas for the different companies. But the key thing is recovering. And, our fuel bill next week will be over $1 million more than we're recovering. And that's...
So what do you do? I suppose you've got to pass... Sooner or later, you've got to pass that on, haven't you?
Well, it's got to be passed on. And the community of Australia is going to pay a big price. And the ones that are being hurt most are people are copping it today. And, we've got some good customers and we're able to negotiate recovery down the track. But we've got to fund that. until that happens. And the smaller businesses, the farmers, the fruit growers, all of those people that have grown bananas and avocados in North Queensland.
And then they put them on a truck and you go to Melbourne or whatever. Yeah,
the cost is ginormous. And the market, at the supermarket, these things have got to go up to recover that, and that's going to have a devastating effect on our economy, and it's going to hurt everybody. But that's what Mr. Trump has caused us, and he's having the effects that I don't think he wanted, I don't think he knew, but it's a major effect, and a lot of small people are going to be very badly hurt. The last 2 weeks I've been tearing my hair out, talking to customers, talking to people, trying to get recovery, and the private companies, the people can make a decision quickly. The major companies, it becomes difficult because they've got to get it through the hierarchy, and the hierarchy don't understand, or maybe don't want to understand. And so it's been a real battle, and I can see it being an unbelievable battle for a lot of people around Australia in rural. I mean, one of the problems in the rural is fertiliser as well, and farming areas, and getting fertiliser just to sow crops, getting diesel to sow crops. And you're putting the high increased cost of putting a crop in. I mean, one of the things I looked at last week and said, well, we need to park those trucks and not do that work because we can't get recovery for it, and we'll lose less money parking them than we will running them.
Mm.
Now, we haven't done that as yet because the key issue has been trying to get to all the people and try and get them to understand. And we're all going to share in the pain. It's going to be horrible.
Mm. I find it amazing. I heard something the other day. Was it yesterday? Or I'm not sure, about the number of insolvencies that have increased in Australia, over the last, a year and a half. But certainly, I think this was a week, 700 in the last month or something, 700. And if you're talking to people, and that's why you're saying what you're saying, I assume that people are doing it tough, and this could be the tip them over the edge.
Yeah, well, in COVID, the tax office let a lot of people go with not paying the dues that they had and let them off the hook for a period of time. And the tax office has been foreclosing on a lot of people in recent times that haven't paid, haven't been doing the right thing. But that, and we're going to go through, I mean, what the government does about relief and whether they can make the decisions. And the big issue we've got coming that everybody needs to be aware of is that I can't see us not having major shortages of product in by the middle to the end of April around Australia, and because the refineries that produce the refined product to come here aren't getting the crude coming in the other side, so the supply chain's going to go quiet. Malaysia's decided not to export us any crude to keep it for themselves. China's cut off loading avgas to Australia, keeping it for themselves. So there's going to be, and we're a country that stupidly has got all the resources, but they're still in the ground, and the environmentalists.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
I can't believe it.
And the governments have left us there. And for 25 years, I've been talking to governments that the easy way to stop Australia is just to put a few ships in the shipping lanes and block the oil coming here, and we're dead. And that's going to happen to us now.
And people have been talking for years about refineries, why we should have our own refineries. We've got oil here, we've got coal here, we've got gas here, but you're exactly right. I mean, it's like we're got no brains.
Yeah, it's disappointing, and this is not going to have a quick recovery. It's going to take a long time, and the pain's going to go through. When the war's going to finish, who knows? But the Straits of almost nothing's coming through there, and 20% of the world's oil comes through there.
I'm talking to Ronnie Finnemore, and going back to the races, because Ron went to the races yesterday. I backed Music Man or Music Time.
Music Time.
Yeah.
Canberra Horse.
Yeah. But I was interested in later on in the galaxy that the horse called Reserve Bank was scratched. I didn't laugh, but I mean, I thought that was an omen. I thought Reserve Bank, I'd better back that. That's what, yeah.
Those... Well, you wonder how anybody could call a horse reserve bank. But anyway, we've all got different things that turn us on.
And you own a few horses, do you? Or you got a share in some horses?
I've got probably too many horses, but I do three things, Macca. I work, I have my horses and my family. And if the order is, my family thinks it's in that order, but really it's the work, family, and then horses. But it's a great, I'm very lucky. Been lucky enough to have a lot of great people work for us and have a fantastic business, and we've worked that way over the years, and we have a good time together.
Yeah, Ron, just stay around. It's lovely to talk to you, mate. I sometimes bump into Ron. Well, I don't bump into him, actually. We get coffee early in the morning sometimes when you're in Sydney. Where do you live?
I live in Rose Bay.
Yeah. Okay.
Down to Lateria. Did you go there this morning?
Where?
Lateria.
Yeah, Lateria. Yeah. I always go there and get everybody coffee and, yeah. It gives us a kickstart. I'm with Ron Finnemore this morning, who's got a trucking company, and as you know, the cost of petrol and diesel is rising like it. Well, I don't know. I can't remember the last. I mean, I remember queues. We haven't got queues yet, not here anyway. But I can't remember the last in terms of. All I can remember is queues. I can't remember the prices, but of course. It's gone up by, as you say, it's $3 here for diesel and about $2.80 or $2.90 for petrol. And we seem to have plenty, but why we haven't got refineries, Ron Finnemore, I just don't know.
Well, it gets back to economics, and we've made things too difficult for people in Australia with some of our environmental regulations and our wage costs in Australia. All of these things have added to the cost in Australia, but we should be looking at what we have to have to run our country. And, you know, I mean, you only got a cut off the shipping lanes and you just close us down, and in a few weeks' time we'll find that out, probably, unfortunately.
Well, as it Grant just sang in his song, "We're Girt by Sea," and we are. I mean, I'm amazed that we don't have our own shipping company. You know, you'd think that a nation surrounded by water and importing stuff on ships, you only have to go to Port Botany or Port Melbourne and look at the ships coming in, loaded to the, you know, to the skies with thousands and thousands of containers. And it was interesting this morning when I talked to Brendan, just back from China. And he had tram bells. He's bought back some tram bells because he nearly got knocked over on the Story Bridge by one of these bikes that going. He said it was doing 100 k's an hour, but it probably wasn't. Probably only doing 80. But he's bought back these tram bells, and you can hear, if you've been to Melbourne, you have been to Melbourne, you can hear the tram bells for miles away. Where those little dinky bells on a bicycle, forget about it. You know, you don't know about it. So, but he said he got back to the airport in Brisbane, and he said there's no checking, hardly any checking of anything. You could bring, you know. You could bring a kitchen sink in and nobody, you know what I mean? He said, but he said in Shenzhen or wherever he was in China, everything's checked. Everything's checked. So I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Is there some sort of Australian malaise of what we do and how we approach life and how we approach what needs to be done and what doesn't need to be done?
Well, it's the economics, unfortunately. And when you start with the base costs in Australia, that puts us out of, unless it's subsidised by the government, and then that's all of us subsidising things. So it's difficult for governments, and we've got to cut the waste, and there's so much waste in the bureaucracy. I mean, if you have a look at NDIS and the cost of that and the overruns and the government doing nothing about that, that points to all the other things that nothing's going to get done about. And then you see the overruns of major projects that are important, but they're getting held to ransom by unions, and it's very, very difficult. And we need a government that has people that are going to stand up and like Paul Keating did and to have the guts to make the hard decisions. John Howard, they're the sort of things we need. But people want to do things that everybody's happy with, and the hard decisions don't get made because they're not going to everybody please everybody. They're going to be good in the long term. It's the same in your business. Sometimes we've got to make hard decisions that if people don't like, but it's the only way we survive.
Mm. Ron, nice to talk to you this morning, and thanks for coming in. You're driving home now?
I'm going to the farm at Boorowa, and hopefully this had some rain, and I would have normally been halfway there, but you twisted my arm when you rang me at the races yesterday.
You're in a good mood at the races, we all are.
So I said I'd come in, and it's been enjoyable. It always is. I listen to you every time on Sunday morning, and listen to the people from all over Australia, all over the world. And it's a great show, you've got to keep doing it for a long time yet, Macca.
I don't know. It's grounding. It's very grounding. That's what I love about it. And you learn things that you never hear anywhere else. Ron Finnemore, good on you, mate. Good luck for all of us. Good on you.
Thanks, Macca. Have a great day.
G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, morning, Macca. How are you? It's Garth here.
G'day, Garth.
Yeah, just on the road, mate. We're up to the Australian titles. We're just going through Geranium in South Australia.
Geranium?
Yeah, that's right. We're on the road.
It's called Geranium. Yeah. I've never been to Geranium.
No, it's in the Mallee, mate. We're on the, the highway to Sydney. We're off to the Surf Lifesaving Australian titles.
Oh, wow. Should be there. Where are they on it? Tugan in Queensland.
Yeah, you got it, on the Gold Coast there, mate, at Tugan, that's right.
Oh, fantastic. What a lovely place. Well, I love going to the Surfboard Championships or any of those things where people from all... See you, Ron. Good on you, mate. Thanks, mate. Where people from all over Australia are there. So, Garth, what's your story?
Mate, we're from Port Elliot. We've got a couple of lads in the car, and we're towing the surfboat up as we speak. And, we hope to have a bit of fun when we get up there.
Oh, when do they start?
I think they kick off on Wednesday coming and go through till Sunday.
Oh, I'd love to be there. As I say, there's people from all over Australia at something like that, aren't they?
Yeah, mate, that's right. We thought we'd give you a buzz and say g'day and just have a chat.
Are you a big, strong bloke, Garth?
No, I'm only about 5'6", and a couple of fellas in the front here. I'm in the back because I'm pretty compact and a bit shorter. The other guys are a bit stronger than me, mate.
All right. So that'll take you, what, a day or two to get up there?
Yeah, we're planning on about two and a half days, just to, casually slide up there and, see what it's all about.
All right, mate. I might see you there. I might try and get up there. I've got to get away.
Have you been up there before, mate?
I have, yes, I have. And a mate of mine goes to the Surfboat Championships. He sometimes rows in it. Mark Campbell, our rowing correspondent. So I'll get in touch with him. He knows all about that. All right. Well, just remember, water them geraniums, as Henry Lawson said, mate. That's the story.
That's a good place.
All right, Garth. We got a number for you. I'll be in touch. Nice to talk to you, mate.
Thank you very much. You have a good day.
See you, mate. Bye. This is the All Over News. And this story speaks to the events that have happened in Australia and in Sydney over the last year or two, which have caused for dismay and regret in my life and in my family's life. But it's not about me. This is about a kid I went to school with. I went to Cogra High. It was Cogra Intermediate High when I first went there. And one of the many friends I made from Cogra High was a bloke called George Fleming. He's written this story to his grandkids, his kids and his grandkids, about his life when he came to Australia. And I'll read it to you. He says to his kids and grandchildren, "Hi kids, I'm writing this email as it's exactly 78 years since my parents, your grandparents and great-grandparents, Emery and Edith Fleischman, arrived in Australia with their two children, Ivan, that's John, 4 years of age, and Fedor, that's George, 18 months. My mother was 23 and my father was 31. We arrived in Australia in December of 1948. My parents originally wanted to go to South Africa, but we were denied residency. Then they applied to Canada, and once again they were rejected. My father's sister had come to Australia before the Second World War, as they could see what Hitler was doing to Jews in Europe. Her husband, Tom Carman, had a successful manufacturing business in Sydney and guaranteed my father a job and undertook that our family would not apply for unemployment benefits. So on that basis, Australia accepted us. How lucky were we? They left war-torn Europe to distance themselves from anti-Semitism. Although the Russians rescued a lot of Jewish people, my parents told me that they were worse than the Germans. I'm sure my mother was raped by a Russian. My father lost his mother and father and six brothers and two sisters who were taken to Auschwitz and murdered. My father came from a very privileged background. His parents owned a large tobacco plantation in Slovakia, and my father said that until he came to Australia, he'd never had another job. He spoke seven languages: English, German, Hungarian, Czech, Italian, Croatian, and French. When we arrived in Australia, we spent about 6 months living with my father's sister at Pymble. My mother and father then decided that they would start their life in Australia and find somewhere to live. Most Jewish migrants, when they came to Australia in Sydney, moved to the eastern suburbs. My parents wanted to start a new life and wanted to escape from the persecution that they suffered, and decided rather than moving to the eastern suburbs, they moved to Bexley, as they wanted to assimilate in the Australian culture and bring my brother and I up as typical Australians. Bexley was a working class area and there were very few migrants there. When we moved there, our neighbours were the Farrers, the Sullivans, the Walkers, the Thomases, the Felthams and the Roders, and they welcomed us with open arms. And I'm not aware that our neighbours realised we were Jewish, but the Farrers insisted that John and I go to their church, and my parents agreed. Mrs. Farrer said to my mother, "After church, everyone comes back to our place and we have tea." So she said, "Bring a plate and join us." My mother interpreted that as they didn't have enough plates, so she brought a dozen plates, but no food on them. Isn't that a typical Australian story? My parents decided to change my brother's name from Ivan to John and my name from Fedor to George, as the King of England was George. We left our last names as Fleischmann until 1952, when my parents, by deed poll, changed their name to Fleming. In 1950, my grandparents, Oscar and Rose Lowy, arrived in Australia with their two children, Kurt and Ruth. They moved in with us at Bexley in our two-bedroom house, so there was eight of us living there. Those were very happy days. After dinner every night, they would make tassels for my uncle and they would get a penny for each one they made. And I can recall them sitting around the cosy, singing their cultural songs. My mother telling me she'd never felt as safe and happy. She used to have nightmares at the sound of German soldiers' footsteps. Australia was very good to us. My father and grandfather decided to open a shop at the Villawood Migrant Centre, selling watches. The migrants there used to complain also that they couldn't get eiderdowns. So my father decided to manufacture them. He acquired a machine from Europe and ducked down from Czechoslovakia, and my mother would do all the sewing. Many times on a Saturday night when I'd come home from the movies, my mother would be still working. They operated it from our backyard in Bexley, where they built a garage and an office. The business was called Rose, after my grandmother. The migrants would buy the eiderdowns and then pay them off on a weekly basis, mainly from their child endowment, as there was no credit cards. And when they left the Villawood Migrant Centre to buy their own homes, mainly around Cabramatta, Liverpool and Blacktown, they'd contact my father to ask him to acquire lawnmowers or blinds or anything for their house, and he would source it, and they'd pay him back. There were no documents. It was all on a handshake. The migrants at Villawood loved my father. He was a very nice man, very fair and generous. He had a very successful little business, and he was called the Merchant of Cabramatta, not the Merchant of Venice. None of his customers knew he was Jewish, and he had a lot of German customers. And I used to say to him, "Dad, how can you deal with these people? They're obviously Nazis." "No," he said, "I want to move on with my life. I don't want to hate anyone, including the Germans. I just want peace." My parents sent John and I to Cogra High School, where I made lifelong friends and where I met my wife, Michelle. How lucky was I? The best decision I've ever made was to marry her. My mother's Jewish friend said to my mother, "How could you let your son marry a non-Jewish girl?" My mother replied, "Even if the Queen of Israel was available, I would still prefer Michelle." "It was not a flash school," says George. He spoke a book, but its motto was Honor Super Omnia, which is Latin for honour above all. I've tried to live my life to reflect this. The point of all the above, he concludes, is that Australia accepted our family when no other country would. Australia has provided opportunity for all of us. It's still a great country, and on Australia Day, I reflect what Australia has done for all of us, and I say, thanks for having us. And that's just part of the story of the life of George Fleming, my school friend. And it seems to me, aren't we all lucky that people like the Fleischmanns made their way to Australia when no one else would have them? This from Callum Gunn. He says, "Good morning, Ian. I'd like to give a big shout out to the emergency services at Sydney Airport, the management and staff who attended to my brother early last week, who died suddenly at the airport. The response when Norman took ill was incredible. The paramedics, ambos, federal police, New South Wales police were at the scene in minutes and worked so hard to get my brother back, but sadly, to no avail. The support given to me by everyone at the scene has left a mark on me that I shall never forget. Finally, Jetstar Airways. Michelle and her team wrapped me up as if I was part of the family. They took care of the other side of this tragedy and rescheduled my flight back home, booked and transported me to a hotel so I could make arrangements for my brother, all at no cost, and most importantly, gave me a hug when I needed one. To everyone involved, thank you from the bottom of my heart, says Callum Gunn. This from Andrew Lang. Dear Ian, I work in the area of biofuels and energy from biomass, but as a farmer, in my overseas travels related to bioenergy and forestry, my interest has included what countries are doing with straw and what their policies are in this whole area of national resource security, which here is almost completely ignored. A year or so ago, I sent you an article I put together on how Australia managed in World War II when petrol was severely rationed. At that time, there were a lot of charcoal gasifiers being developed and made here for commercial vehicles, buses, taxis, tractors, commercial travellers and businesses. Our local butter factory had a truck powered by producer gas picking up all the cream, and the factory itself was powered by an engine fuelled by wood gas. When I put in a request to the Weekly Times back then, I got many people, all men, ringing me up with their memories of this era. I took notes from these calls and wrote them up in the article attached. They make great reading about how life was then. So with this upcoming fuel shortage in Australia, if all else fails, with breeding up horses, etc., we can at least go back to making charcoal and fitting gas producers to some of the older petrol-engined vehicles that are still around. I keep a few on our farm just for this eventuality, says Andrew Lang. It's a long article. I can't read it to you now, but maybe Andrew's implying it's all going to hit the fan and we're going to go back to gas burners. I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Earlier this morning, we had a call from Mark in Geelong because his son Jacko was running in the there's a marathon on. You know, one of those what do they call them, Kel? Not a marathon, it's Ironman, and his son's running it. Now, hundreds and thousands probably running in, which is cycling for 100 miles and swimming for 100 miles. You know, a lot of work. But anyway, he said, just wanted to tell you, Ian, that I'm a first responder and we were called out to McDougal Peak Station yesterday because the bloke had come off his motorbike and there was a young bloke there called Lawson, which is a great name, and he was a real help and he jumped in the car and blow me down. Lawson's on the line. Good morning, Lawson.
Morning.
How you going, mate?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right. That's a great name. You named after Henry or what, do you reckon?
No, I'm named after my grandpa.
Your grandpa was Lawson too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Now, tell me, Mark, you obviously know Mark because Mark reckons you're all right. He said you drove the car and showed him. Was it your dad that came off the bike?
Yeah, it was.
How's he going? He's in hospital now, right?
Well, he was in hospital. He was in hospital for about a week, but now the hospital said to him, he's going good on his crutches, so we're back in our house in Adelaide, and he just needs to recover here.
Oh, that's good. And is that where you are? Are you at the house, or are you out on McDill Peak?
No, I'm at the house.
Good on you, mate. So you drove the car or your truck out or your ute out to show the responders where your dad was?
Yeah, because dad was on a fence line that was a little while from the road, so I had to drive out. I'd wait for the ambulance and that to get out there.
And how do we know that Dad came off the bike? Did he call on his mobile, did he, or something? Or you were with him at the time, or what?
No, so what happened was we were originally doing fencing, and then Dad said, because it was all after the rain, and Dad said he wanted to go and check a fence because it might have, like, been pushed over or anything. And Dad, me and Mum went to wait at the dam, and then it just started to take a little too long. And, so then I went from like a ride on my motorbike, and I couldn't find him. So we jumped in the car, and then we found him just down the fence line.
Jeez, you must have been in a bad way, eh?
Yeah.
So Lawson, according to Mark, you were very helpful to them too.
Well, yeah, I hope.
Exactly. Tell me about McDill Peak. What sort of a place is that, mate?
Oh, well, it's a cattle station. And, well, there's actually two stations joined together. They're both on each side of the highway, but the whole entire company is called McDill Peak. And, yeah, we have, it's about 1.3 3 million acres or something. And yeah.
3 million acres. And what do you do around the place? You do School of the Air or School of Distance, do you?
I do School of the Air, Port Augusta.
And how's that go? All right?
Yeah, good. I've missed a fair bit of it now because now I'm in Adelaide.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's nice. And you've had a lot of rain out there, obviously.
Yeah, we've had heaps. That was half the reason Dad came off because he couldn't see where he was going. All the grass.
I shouldn't. What, did he break a leg or something or an arm or ribs?
Oh, yeah. He broke a leg, his hip, his collarbone.
God, help me. He must have been travelling.
Yeah, he was going like 90 or 100 or something.
Oh, well, yes. And I suppose the road wasn't good and it's been wet and it's a trap for, well, he's not a young player, but you know what I mean. Lawson, it's nice to talk to you, mate. I'd like to come out to McDowell. How far, whereabouts is McDowell Peak? McDowell.
Well, it's actually fairly far out, so it's 8 hours from Adelaide and it's an hour and a half from Coober Pedy.
Uh-huh. So, so you enjoy it out there?
Yeah, I love it.
So you're going to do that when you grow up? You're going to be work on a station, you reckon?
Yep. I want to be a helicopter pilot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, good luck with that. Yeah, that'll be good. That's an interesting thing to do too, and help you round up cattle and all that sort of stuff and get around. You can get around in a helicopter, hey?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good on you, Lawson. I hope to meet you sometime, mate. I could send you. Have we got any of those small T-shirts? Are you a small fella, are you, Lawson? Are you big or small? Sorry?
Yes.
Yes, small. Have we got any small T-shirts left, girl, with a phone box on them? I don't know. I'll see how we go, and we'll send you a T-shirt anyway, and if you can't wear it, if it's too big, we'll give it to Dad, okay?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Lawson, what's it like out there today in Adelaide?
Oh, yeah, sunny.
Sunny. Oh, that's good.
Nice.
All right, mate. Nice to talk to you, Lawson.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You too. See ya. Bye. Yeah. What a great Australian voice. So you don't hear voices like that in the radio. And it's a great voice. I love it. I just loved his voice. Oh, blow me down. Dan Tehan's on the line. Good morning, Dan Tehan.
Macca, great to be with you this morning. I'm coming into you from Coleraine in Western Victoria this morning. Mm. And there is a fantastic community event going on. There's a Points Arboretum, which is basically a large botanical garden, which was built by the community. But there was a fellow called Peter Francis, who was named after. He was a shearer, sheared right across the eastern seaboard, came back to Coleraine, got emphysema because he smoked, and they thought he was going to die. And then he started planting natives, banksias and eucalypts, on a hill in Coleraine, until the community got in behind him, and it is now the largest collection of eucalypts in Australia here in Coleraine. Now, Parks Victoria took it over. Unfortunately, they didn't put the resourcing into it, and it was literally degraded, but the community has just taken it back over, done an incredible job at getting it up and running again, and now they've got a community fun run and event going on this morning to celebrate getting it back and getting it back into pristine condition. And it's just fantastic to see the community and what they can do when they're given control back.
Exactly.
From government.
What sort of area does that cover, Dan Tehan?
Oh, it's about 4 acres. It's on a hill. It was literally a bear paddock which overlooked the town of Coleraine, and Peter Francis and the community just planted it out. So if anyone's going through Coleraine, it's between Hamilton and Casterton, you should stop and come and have a look at it, because you will not see a greater collection of eucalypts anywhere else in the world. And there's beautiful walking tracks, there's signs to identify all the different varieties of eucalypts, and the community are literally, they've redone all the tracks, they're putting all the signs again so you know and can identify all the different types of eucalypts. And it's something which, you know, Australia will be once again very proud to have an arboretum like this.
I'm sure at Burrabogie and I'm sure at Toganmoon, I'm sure at Big Willandra and out on the Coleraine. Is that the same Coleraine?
It is.
Oh, I suppose it is, yeah.
It is. And
is it pronounced Coleraine or Coleraine? Coleraine.
It depends. I call it Coleraine with my broad Australian accent. Some people use Coleraine. I don't think it really matters. It's the historic here too. They have the oldest jumps race still in Australia here at Coleraine. So it's called the Great Western Steeple, which is a fantastic annual event. It's a wonderful country community, and to see everyone out, and they're as proud as punch of what they've been able to do.
So they should be, eh?
Yes, absolutely. It's great. And the 5K runners uphill and downhill, and I unfortunately had a couple of glasses of red last night, so I'm already puffing about a K in, but we'll get through the last 4Ks all right.
Yeah, they always call them fun runs, but every country town, every little place needs something, whether it's the Country Music Festival in Tamworth or the Coleraine Arboretum, when people will beat a path to their door. And there's one, where's the other one? Kell up near Wellington. There's another lovely arboretum, and there's one in Sydney. They're great places to go, and there's the tree one at in Canberra there, where you live, right? Mostly. Often, speaking of which, Dan Tehan, I can't let you go without asking you about the big change in Australian voting. I know it's South Australian election, but your party's not done very well, and the One Nation's come up, and I'm not sure how the Labor Party did, but they'd be worried too about the... Well, I don't think they're worried, but worried for their own skins, I suppose. What's your take on it, Dan Tehan?
Well, my take on it is you've got to just work hard, know and understand your community, represent them to the best of your ability, and listen. And we're getting sent a message at the moment. People want us to be much more self-reliant. They want us to use much more common sense. And they want us to be proud about our communities and our nation. And I think, you know, we've got to listen to that, and we've got to reflect that in what we do. And if we've got policies in place and candidates who represent the community and understand the community, then I think we can make sure that we address the messages that we're being sent. But literally, it's all about hard work, common sense, and making sure that we're reflecting where the community's at the moment. And there's no doubt they want us much more prouder of our nation and everything that's done, and what communities can do rather than government. And, you know, just being out here this morning, you see it writ large.
Dan Tehan, you're also Shadow Energy. We had Ronnie Finnemore in here this morning. You know Ron Finnemore, you see their trucks everywhere. And he was very concerned about the price of diesel, and we talked about all things. I'll put it on our podcast and everyone can have a listen. But have you got any advice for everybody or for governments and indeed for people who are out there concerned about maybe this could go on? You know, I mean, I remember people saying, I heard the other day it'll go on till May or whatever, and you hear the story about the First World War or the Second World War, said, oh, it'll be over by Christmas. Of course, that went on for 5 years. Who knows, Dan?
No, that's right. I did listen to your interview when I was driving from Hamilton with Ron Finnemore this morning, and there was a lot of common sense there. The thing that I think we've got to get back to is country towns right across Australia used to have fuel depots where we stored fuel. Now, we've got to get back to doing that, because that meant that you had your 90 days or 120 days of fuel, and you had it stored right around the country. And sadly, all those depots over time have been closed down.
Why were they closed? Ron Finnemore says it's all about money and it's about wages. Is that why they've closed? Why were they closed down?
Yeah, because it was seen as too costly to keep them. Now, we've got to find a way, and I don't know whether, you know, it's investment allowances or what it is, which enable these depots to get up and running again and for us to be able to store fuel. It's just too important for us not to. And, you know, I was just talking to a local ag supplier here, and he's seen his diesel fuel bill go up by $400,000 just in the last couple of weeks. So, you know,
Ronnie Finnemore said his has gone up by $1 million. Gone up by $1 million.
Yeah.
In the last whatever.
And that eventually will all get, you know, has to get passed on to the consumer because there's no other way. Otherwise, these businesses go broke. So there's going to be severe consequences as a result of it. So I think we do have to stop and think, okay, we never used to have these challenges. Why? Well, I think because we had these storage depots. It wasn't huge. They weren't huge amounts of diesel. But if you had them right around the nation, it meant that collectively you had a much larger supply here in Australia. And I think that's what we've got to look at again.
I can't believe I go back to COVID, and when COVID struck, and people had talked about COVID, the bloke what's his name? I can't remember. But a couple of people had talked about pandemics, and of course, we just ignore that. Our public servants and our departments ignore all that, and so we were totally unprepared for COVID, for a pandemic, which we should not have been. And the same, we've had oil shocks before. I mean, what's going on? Why haven't we got our own? And Ron said it's because we haven't got any money or it costs too much, so we just get rid of it. We get rid of everything, but because of the cost, and it's to our own detriment. I mean, why we don't have more refining, and what you've just said, I mean, I just find it unbelievable. We've obviously had it too easy in Australia, and when the hit hits the fan, we're totally unprepared for everything.
And you've got to remember the way the world's going is what we've had relative stability since the Second World War, but now we're into a very different geostrategic climate. And so we've got to get back to thinking, okay, let's look after ourselves more. And if we do that and are much more sensible about it, I think we can get the policy directions that we need to make us far more independent than what we've become on the rest of the world. And we need to do it because where the world's heading, we're going to see more of this, not less of it. And so there's a real lesson for us and a warning for us. You know, you've got to be able to stand on your own two feet, and fuel is absolutely essential for that.
Dantine, good on you, mate, and good luck with your fun run, mate.
Thanks, Ian. Good on you. Cheers, bye.
See you, bye. If you've just got up, you've missed heaps, kids. Sue's on the Gold Coast. Morning, Sue.
Hi, how are you, Macca?
I'm exhaustipated already. I've only been up since 3 o'clock.
Oh, well, that's better late than ever.
Yeah. What's happening?
Oh, what I remember first, we had the most amazing day because my husband's uncle was Hal Litchfield, and who's the navigator for Kingsford Smith.
Wow.
And they had the reenactment of the landing of the Kingsford Southern Cross in the mascot.
When was that? Yesterday?
No, Thursday.
Thursday, right.
I was telling you last week, but I got the other things to warn you about. It was the most amazing day. Dick Smith was there. He was the main sponsor of the whole restoration of the old Kingsford Smith plane.
Mm.
And then Jane Baden, her great-grandfather was the sponsor for the original Southern Cross. He was a grazier from Queensland.
So tell me this. What landed? What did you have a landing?
Oh yes, it came in. It came in on it. Gave it special dispensation to land at Mascot at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock and in the morning, and the plane was
the reconstructed Southern Cross.
Wow, and who was on board that?
Oh, we had there was Jim Thurston's son was one of the pilots. There was a nephew, a grandson of Kingsford Smith and Charles Armour, Dick Smith.
All right, there you go.
It was absolutely fantastic. I had tears in my eyes.
Now, is there a rep? What's the one at Brisbane Airport?
I think that was the original one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, go on.
In 28, they're going to have the big centenary. Because it's centenary since it flew across the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, wow!
The first international flight in the world. Yeah.
And you said your husband was a navigator. Is that right?
No, my husband's uncle was Hal Litchfield.
Oh, Hal Litchfield. He was a navigator.
He was a navigator. And he was the one that when they had the Coffee Royale run.
Was he the bloke that went out in the wing and poured oil in the thing? No.
No, I don't think so. No.
Anyway, yeah, I hear all these stories, and
I know you do too. But Hal, they had to write notes from one to the other. If they wanted to do something, they had to write a note because they couldn't hear the note because of the noise.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that story too.
But the Cocky Royale run was that was the one that made world headline news. They landed a clay pan.
Yeah.
And all they had was a flask of brandy with a dash of coffee in it.
But they managed to take off again, didn't they?
Oh, 13 days later. Yeah.
Yeah. Sue. Was there a crowd there? What runway did they land on?
One of the main runways, the east to west runway, they land on.
Well, so they put everybody else in a holding pattern, eh?
Oh no, there was in between flights.
Yeah.
If you go on YouTube, it's all on YouTube with the plane. They're saying this is 98 years in the making.
So we'll have to go. We'll have to go and look at that. I should have gone out there, but anyway, we'll have to go and look at that.
Yeah, they've got in 2028. They've got the big celebration of 100 years.
Okay.
Of course, mascot in those days was just a paddock. I think it was a holding paddock for the Love family.
Ah, okay. All right, Sue. Good on you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
G'day. This is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Narelle from Laurieton, mid-North Coast, New South Wales.
Narelle, did they name the cyclone after you?
Or? Yes, they did. I'm famous. I'm famous now. I'm not sure whether it's a good omen or a bad omen because next Saturday, my husband and I, and we're in our 70s, so we're old farts, we run North Coast Speedboat Classics, which is a Facebook group to bring owners of classic speedboats together, and we have a run on a river somewhere once a month. But next Saturday, the 28th, up at the Boatworks Marina on the Gold Coast, we're trying to get the largest static display of classic speedboats together in decades, all in one spot.
You say a static display, so they're not going to be running?
Well, some will run on the Sunday, but the main event is the Saturday static display. So it's at the marina. The boats are all on show, 60 to 100 of them, all sorts of old speedboats.
These are these ones with polished tops on them, like and the big things that open up, and there's a big V8 in there, like you see in James Bond.
We've actually got a James. We've got a James Bond boat in our group, but I don't think they can come up there at the moment. But there's all sorts of boats. Some of them are a one-off that you'd never see anywhere else. So timber, fiberglass, inboards, outboards, every sort of boat. If you think back to the 70s, when just about everybody had a boat and was skiing, it's that era we're bringing back.
And so that's going to be at the marina where?
The Boatworks Marina. It's at Coomera on the Gold Coast.
Coomera, as in named after the sweet potato. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, so the Boatworks Drive, Coomera, and it's all free entry, free everything. There's food and drink available. We've got an old jukebox there that'll be belting out some 70s, 80s kind of music. Lots of people, lots of famous people in the ski race and racing boat industry will be there. So it's just a wonderful opportunity for people to come and have a mag to maybe people I haven't spoken to in decades, actually. So, it's just going to be a great activity for anybody who's interested in boats to come
along. Now, Narelle, you live in Laurieton. You don't live on the Gold Coast.
No. We're quite broke at the moment. We've done two or three trips up and back so far. So I'm trying not to think of the fuel issue, to be honest.
That's what I was thinking. After Anzac Day, people leave. That was always traditionally, they say, after Anzac Day, everyone takes off. And I remember a lady called us from Darwin last year about something else, and she said, we've spent over thousands of dollars in fuel travelling around. So imagine if this keeps going, it'll be reducing the number of people or the distances they want to travel too, because you can't get far when it's $3 a gallon for diesel. Most people who travel are pulling caravans with diesels. It's going to cost a lot of money.
If you remember back in the 70s when everybody had a boat, and then the fuel prices went through the roof, and the first thing that disappeared were the boats. So we're a bit concerned that our boats and our passion is going to be the thing that's hit first on this scare, fuel scare as well. So, but it is what it is, and we're trying not to think negatively. We're giving everybody an opportunity to get out and have some fun and be happy.
Well, you know, I can lament, you know, for boats and for people who want to travel, but I think it'll end. I don't know when it'll end, but something will happen and we'll turn around and, you know, you just got to day to day, Narelle, that's all. You can't worry about the future, I don't think. It's no point. You just concentrate on today and then tomorrow's another day. You can make some plans, but if they don't happen, I think something will turn up. I think something will turn up.
We travelled back on Friday from the Gold Coast. We took the first of our boats up there and there was fuel. It wasn't that there was no fuel. It was just getting a little bit pricey. But for anybody that's a little bit hesitant, thinking that they'll run out, my experience on Friday was that there was fuel around. So.
We go a bit nuts, don't we? I mean, we don't think about things. Look at the toilet paper thing, Narelle. I mean, give me a break. People fighting in queues over bloody toilet paper. I mean, really? it's just unbelievable. I mean, I know your bottom is important, but really, everybody loves their bottom in some sort of way, but... I just think that was just ridiculous, ridiculous. Oh. I mean, if you'd have been out in a shearing shed in the 60s, you'd go in there and there was a copy of The Age or The Telly hanging up and that's what you'd use and, you know, it wasn't too bad. And
yeah, we got by, didn't we?
We got by and the same will be, you know. I mean, the news likes to beat everything up, you know, and say, well, you know, and I think we'd be right. We just...
It's dramatised, Macca, and...
Who's this, Narelle? Here in Laurieton.
Hang on, this is the other half.
I thought it might have been just some bloke who heard it.
Of all of this.
I thought it might be just some bloke who heard listening to his radio, going on a walk, and he's blown into your place. And yeah, anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, look, we live in this Laurieton, and there was just panic buying here on fuel, and the whole town ran out of fuel, which was ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
And people are filling up cans and. Everywhere.
Anyway, we'll just get our backsides up to the Gold Coast and have a fabulous weekend. So 28th of March.
And it's taken us 9 years, Macca, to get to this point. We started off with one boat. Now we've got 7,000 members.
All right. And it's at Boatworks, is it?
Boatworks Marina, the largest marina in the Southern Hemisphere.
It's owned by Tony Longhurst. Tony Longhurst was the Bathurst driver.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He's been a water skier. He's a fabulous guy. And he has given us the boat works for free. They're just helping us out because we haven't got the money to be hiring that sort of place.
No, well, you can go and see that. And you can also go to Tugan for the National Surfboat Championships.
Exactly.
They're on next weekend.
Exactly.
I mean, it's all happening north of the border.
It's all happening on the Gold Coast, isn't it?
See you, Narelle.
We live in the opposite to the Gold Coast, Laurieton.
We don't even have a traffic light.
Oh, wow. I love Laurieton. I know Laurieton quite well.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yep. Okay, Macca, thank you so much for taking our call. Hope to see lots of you on the Gold Coast, 28th of March, Boatworks Marina with North Coast Speedboat Classics.
All right. Good on you. See ya.
Thank you.
Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, Macca. My name's Brian. How are you today?
Good, thanks, Brian.
Macca, the reason I mainly ring is what I'm doing what most males at my age of 81, they make their wife a cup of tea first thing in the morning. And it took me away from the radio for 5 minutes. But on returning, I heard you talking about a family that lived in Bexley.
Yeah. The Fleischmans.
The Fleischmans / Flemings.
Yeah.
Now, I was part of the growing up period of that family. I used to live half of my life at the Fleischmans, playing with the boys and eating Mrs. Fleming's food, which was absolutely delightful. And the reason I'm ringing, how did you get that information about them? Is there a book or something?
No, well, I used to go to school. I went to school with George.
I lived in Bexley myself.
Yeah, well, I went to school with George and I've kept in touch with George over the years and we talk from time to time. And And, yeah, I helped him through high school. Don't tell him that. But so, and the other day, from time to time, we were in contact with one another, and the other day he sent me a little piece that he wrote for his grandkids on Australia Day about how thankful he felt and his family felt for being welcomed into Australia because they'd tried to get into South Africa because they were trying to escape Europe because they'd lived through the war their parents had and, you know, horrible things, the horrible anti-Semitism that was around then and is around now in Australia, unfortunately. And so they tried to leave and they went to South Africa, couldn't, tried to get into Canada, they were rejected. Uh-huh. So they ended up in Australia because they had family here of some sort, and they said they could put them up, and also that he could work in the factory because he had a factory, and he said you can work here and you won't get any employment benefits and you won't be doing that. So they, on that basis, they were welcomed into Australia, and they haven't looked back, and they just said how thankful they were to live in Australia and what a lovely time it was, and just some of the little things that went on.
Well, I tell you something, what the Fleming family did for us is amazing. They were and they still are a great family. I don't know whether who's alive these days. Is his brother John alive?
Yeah, John's alive and George is alive. The thing and the reason why I read it, Brian, is because it's and as I said at the end of the little piece that I read, it's really there was thousands and thousands of families like the Fleischmanns who were welcomed into Australia.
And hard workers
and enriched the place that we live in now. Unfortunately, there's some bad eggs around, but mostly the people who came here to Australia enriched us immeasurably, and that's why I read it. And I think it's always nice to have positive things where people say, well, look, I came to Australia and it's been a lovely place and, you know, and I only met Mr. Fleming, once, I think, after school. And Mrs. Fleming too, lovely people. And I didn't know they were live there, but that's why I read it. And there'd be thousands and thousands and thousands right around Australia who had the same sort of story, and they were Jewish fleeing from anti-Semitism. And there you go, Bryony. What did you do for a living, Brian?
I was in retail.
Uh-huh.
I worked for Jerry Harvey for too long.
I was just thinking about retail the other day and David Jones. I don't know how retail's going to survive, Brian.
It's not.
Which is a great shame. It's nothing nicer than going into a car yard and looking for you can't find cars in the car yard now. You have to order something. Oh, you can order that and we'll get it in 6 months, but...
Correct.
But retail just seems to be on the terminal decline, Brian, which is a great shame to me.
Well, I tell you what, when there's people like you and George are still around, there's still plenty of love in the country.
Good on you, Brian.
we went through great years.
Yeah, we certainly did. But there's no reason why we can't do it again, Brian, but it needs a change of outlook for people. And some of the people who get publicity here in Australia are pains in the arse, and they seem to get all the publicity. So, but there's lots of good people around, Brian, apart from you and me. There's lots and lots of good people around. And Bruce. See ya. Okay. I got to fly.
Well, nice conversation with you. Thank you.
See ya, mate. Bye.
Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hello.
Hello.
Ian, Luciano speaking from Mittagon.
Hi, Luciano. How are you going, mate?
Oh, my God. Yes, I'm very well. Ian. I'm so excited to be able to talk to you. I've been trying for quite some time, but I'm unsuccessful. But today, I'm very fortunate that I have the chance to say hello to you. And they are...
What are you up to? What are you up to, Luciano? Where are you?
They are 30 years, you know, in the first time I speak to you, 26th of January. Remember Australia Day?
Yeah, I'll say, Luciano rang me up on Australia Day 30 years ago. I still remember the accent. And Lucia, and he said, hello, Ian, I'm listening. Today I'm getting Australia, something like that. And... and it brought the house down. So Luciano, what are you up to, mate?
I'm just doing the same things. I've been doing a lot of traveling. I've been doing a lot of golfing, and I've been doing a lot of work. Tomorrow I'm leaving to go to Vanuatu for some work with Rotary, and we are doing 8 days there, voluntary work on a school, and then I will be back in the end of next week. And then, I wanted just to let you know that Robin unfortunately passed away last year.
Oh, dear.
And we are just leaving Daniel and Christina, my two daughters. They are here today, and I'm having a bit of a party today because it's my birthday today.
Well, when you come back for a happy birthday today, I haven't got my guitar here. Happy birthday to you. when you come back from Vanuatu, and good on you for doing lovely work. You remind me of my friend and great families and lovely people who've come to Australia and just contributed in a great way. When you come back in a week or two, I'll come down and see you. We'll come down.
Yeah, I hope you do, and we're having a nice party like we did many years ago.
All right. Good on you, Luciano.
A big hug to you and naturally to everybody at the ABC. Thanks for the wonderful work you do, Ian.
Thank you.
It is such a pleasure to be part of this Aussie trip.
Give us a ring from Vanuatu. Love.
I will.
All right.
I will.
That'd be good. Good
Next
on you, mate.
Sunday. Bye-bye, my boy. Thank you very much, Ian.
Thanks.
Ciao.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao. Ciao, ciao. Ciao.
Don't you love this accent? G'day, this is Macca quickly.
Good morning. It's Lisa from Margaret River. How you going, Macca?
I wish I was there, Lisa.
I wish you were too. I just got caught your beautiful song about the trains and the gentleman train driver, and I thought, oh, I'm going to call in. I am a heavy diesel mechanic, and I used to work on the locos for BHP, and now I'm a rail transport supervisor supervising our wonderful train drivers up there. It's really cool.
Whereabouts?
We're in the Pilbara, BHP, at Port Hedland.
So you go up there often?
Yeah, I do 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, yes.
Oh, how good. Because Hedland's one, I don't know why, it's one of my favourite places in the world. I love it. I love the colours. And Margaret River, you're living the dream, Lise.
I'm absolutely living the dream, Macca. And yes, I hear what you, I used to live in Port Hedland prior to Margaret River, and it is something, the red dirt gets in your blood. We all agree. My mum and whole family agree. Yeah.
Well, and we'll try and meet you in, find out when you're in Hedland, and we'll try and be there too. It's hard to organise, but, or otherwise, Margaret River.
I'm doing a free sausage sizzle in the main street of Margaret River today for all our lovely tourists and community. So I wish you were here.
Oh, well.
But another time.
What time's that start?
Well, I have to go now, and I should be cooking by 8 o'clock WA time.
You're a little champion. Good on you, Lise.
Thanks for your station. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. And I'd like to thank our technical producer, Peter Clemson. I'd like to thank Tanya Buckland, who's helping us with the phones and everything, running around the place, and my producer, Lee Kelly. He does a wonderful job. They all do a wonderful job. And thank you for your contribution. I hope you've enjoyed. It's one of a... I just, sometimes the program just sings, and this morning it's sung, I reckon. You can write us a letter, Post Office Box 9994, Sydney 2001, wherever you are. Have a great day. Don't panic too much about anything. It won't help you panicking. And what will be, will be. And stay tuned on the morning show. Oh, wonderful morning. Wonderful morning. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.